Committee come to order, please. Today is Monday, February 10th, and it's 8:02 a.m. In attendance are myself, Senator Stevens, chairing, Senate President Huggins, Senator Gardner, Senator Stebbins. We have a quorum. Today we're going to take up two bills, Senate Bill 107 relating to Alaska Reading for Enhanced Academic Development, or called the READ Act. This is the second hearing on the bill. Today we'd like to hear additional testimony from anyone who's interested in testifying. We have not heard from the superintendents on this issue, so I'm looking forward to hearing from the school districts. We will also take some public testimony if anybody wants to speak to the bill. And then my intention is to set it aside. Not my intent to close public hearing today on Senate Bill 107, so there will be opportunities later to speak to this bill. And, of course, written testimony is also welcome. The same goes for Senate Bill 139, Governor's Education Package. Today we'll consider several sections. We've considered two sections already, exit exam and challenging. There are several others we need to consider. And college and career readiness assessments, charter school applications and appeals, and stipends for the board school students. A very big bill, lots of issues there. So we'll begin working our way through all of those issues. So before we do that, I want to make sure folks know that today at 1 o'clock in room 106, we'll have our school board's fly-in, a great opportunity for members of the Senate to hear from all of the districts. I know it's really hard for all of the districts to get in to see every senator, so this is an opportunity for you, for us all to get together and have an open discussion. That's at 1 o'clock, room 106 on education. So we have the bill before us now, Senate Bill 139. I'm sorry, we're going to start with 107. Senate Bill 107, K-3 reading program. And Mr. Tim Lampkin, if you would come forward and introduce the bill. And we also have Senator Dunleavy with us, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens. Before you is Senate Bill 107. This is the second hearing on this bill. Just wanted to share with the committee that I have been working actively with the department. I've made some changes to the bill. We have not yet prepared or are ready to publish a CS to share with you yet, but do want to report that we are actively working together to make this a good, clean, tight policy to move forward with. That's all I had to report this time. I was hoping to call upon the department and the superintendents in particular, but certainly would also like to hear from our school board association members as to their thoughts and input and comments, feedback on this bill and this policy.
Okay. Thank you very much, Tim. Commissioner, good to see you this morning. Do you have any comments you could make on the bill? We have heard from you before, or any thoughts you may have.
For the record, my name is Mike Hanley. I'm the Commissioner for the Department of Education and Early Development. And Dr. McCauley has been working very closely with the sponsor and with Tim on this. And I'll allow her to share some of her comments.
Thank you, Commissioner. Ms. Holly.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Susan McCauley. I'm the Director of Teaching and Learning Support for the Department of Education and Early Development. Our conversation has focused on page 2, lines 19 through 21. And working to get clarity regarding specifically the kinds of assessments that are intended as part of this bill, to have a clear understanding of what is meant by instructional practices and staff development programs. This section of the bill requires those three things to be approved by the Board of Education, but further on in the bill then, in language specific to districts, it requires districts to use practices and programs and assessments as approved by the Board of Education. So just working to get clear about exactly what's intended by that section, since it is both here with relevance for the department and further on with relevance for districts.
Thank you, Dr. McCall. You stated before that some districts are already doing this. so it's not a high bar for them, but other districts are not. Do you have any further reflections on that? Are we talking about half and half or anything like that? Any reflection on that issue?
Chair Stevens, we haven't collected data specifically so that I can give you a definitive answer. My impressions are, as I stated last time, that our large districts have in place practices, a lot of the practices that are reflected in this bill. I don't mean that, though, to say that our smaller districts don't. Many of our smaller districts do as well. I just am not certain what percentage of them do and don't. But as far as, for example, the use of both screening assessments, all districts are now required to do that as of this fall, but diagnostic assessments are specifically mentioned in this bill. It is my impression that a lot of districts are using diagnostic assessments. The bill goes further into setting up a reading plan for students who are experiencing difficulties, that, I think, probably has more variability across the state than other components. The use of evidence-based, research-based reading materials, for example, is mentioned in the bill, and it's my impression that many districts are doing that. But as the bill moves into more specifics, the reading plan in particular for students who are struggling, I think that component in particular has more variability across the state.
Thank you, Dr. McCauley. Any questions from the committee? Thank you very much, Commissioner. At this time, do we have any superintendents signed up to speak to us? This is like pulling teeth, getting information from our superintendents. Where are they this morning?
Yeah? En route, probably. They're probably en route.
Could be. Okay, we have Ms. Boggs from Anchorage. Posey Boggs, if you're with us, Posey, can you hear me?
Hi, thank you. Yes, I am with you. I appreciate your taking my comments today. For the record, I'm Posey Boggs, and today I'm especially testifying on behalf of one of my children. At the end of first grade, we were told to leave our district by two teachers who evaluated him, because they said the district had nothing to offer him in learning how to read. That was quite a few years ago, but as you know, I'm still tutoring kids who are not reading. Further, I'm testifying also on behalf of two nonprofits, Literate Nation Alaska, the Alaska branch of the International Dyslexia Association, and a grassroots movement called Decoding Dyslexia. I'd like to testify in both SB 107 and SB 139 because I believe you can't have the outcomes desired in SB 139 without honoring the intent of SB 107.
Thank you, Ms. Boggs. Just remind you, let's not get into too much detail on 139. We'll have an opportunity to speak to that later. Right now, let's really try and focus on 107. I realize there's a connection there. But let's try not to get too far into 139, if you would.
Yes, sir. In the minutes of January 29 on SB 107, it was stated that SB 107 related closely to the Colorado READ Act, and I really commend you for that connection. I would like to point out that the Colorado READ Act focuses on students with significant reading deficiencies, and SB 107 specifically excludes via page 7, line 29, Alaskans like my son with significant reading deficiencies simply because they have an IEP. Further, the Colorado READ Act distributed funds for various things such as a resource bank of assessments, instructional programming, and professional development. My point is, the Colorado READ Act awarded a group out of Connecticut called Literacy How a professional development contract, and specific, of course, to literacy. And I'm asking you to ponder why that occurred, why professional development and in literacy instruction is needed. I also ask that you prove to yourself and all Alaskans that our teachers are prepared as pre-service teacher candidates and as licensed teacher candidates to pass basic reading instructional competency assessments and advanced reading instruction competency assessments. Based on the outcomes of this sort of assessment, I believe the state of Alaska needs to legislate intensive support for our teachers so that we are guaranteed that they have the knowledge to actually teach reading to any child in front of them. And I thank you for all your hard work.
Well, thank you, Ms. Boggs, and really appreciate the testimony you've given us in the last few meetings, and thank you so much for your comments. And that's a very important issue about professional development that I think we probably need to explore quite a bit more. Thank you, Ms. Boggs. Okay, I don't think we have anybody else signed up. anybody in the room that wants to have a chance to testify on this issue before we close? And move on to the next matter. Okay, let's go on to the Senate Bill 139. The governor's, and just again, we're holding this bill, hoping to hear from the districts and superintendents on it, but have not yet. So let's move on to Senate Bill 139, the governor's education package. And Tim, would you come back and let's talk about the issues that we've dealt somewhat with and those we have not dealt with at all.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, for the record, Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens. So today, before you have Senate Bill 39, again, this is the second hearing on this bill. We heard it last in a joint hearing with the House, or the other body, excuse me. We were going to take up today just the policy sections. We'll leave the financial components that are focused on financial components to a later hearing. Those sections being, first of all, challenging a course, a student in high school that may already have expressed or to demonstrate expertise or mastery of a subject may take an exam at the district level to prove that they have earned or deserve credit for that course. We've taken up that policy issue in another bill from the other bodies. Representative Seaton's bill that we passed from committee. The language in that bill and the governor's bill is a little bit different, but I would argue that substantively they are the same policy. The next section would be college.
And just a comment that you know, we've got these two bills that we've already dealt with, the exit exam, the challenging, that are a part of the governor's omnibus bill, and who knows what's going to happen if the omnibus bill passes and moves ahead, then these bills are not needed. But just in case something happens along the way, we can at least move forward on these two issues, hopefully. Please go ahead, Tim. The second issue is
Section 2, Mr. Chairman, would require an assessment in order for a student to receive a diploma and graduate from high school. They would be required to take an exam. In this instance, it would be the SAT, the ACT, or work keys. And then the following sections, of course, repeal the exit exam. And that is really the only real difference between Senate Bill 111 that passed from this committee not too long ago and this bill repealing the exit exam. That's the caveat that it replaces the qualifying exit exam with one of these assessments. And I guess I would beg the question, if we'd like to dive into that question right now, as to what do we benefit by with this assessment? And there's three things that come to mind for me. Number one, we get lots of data for policymakers. Number two, the students and parents get a sense of their aptitudes, where they might choose to go and have greater success later in life. And three, of course, there's a lot of revenue that would be generated by the institutions that are providing the assessment. Question is, that data, if indeed there are students out there that may or may not choose to go to college or have no interest in career advancement and so forth, which is perfectly fine, in which case all they would technically have to do is show up to the a testing location, sign their name, and just sit there or fill in the circle C, 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 or so forth, purposefully tanking on the exam, in which case it would make the data useless. And secondly, then, if you apply that to the second prong, that if it is a tool to provide assessment or aptitudes or their abilities and skills and so forth, but they purposefully tank on it, again, it doesn't give them a fair read on what they would be capable of doing had they really applied themselves to the test. So then that leaves the third prong of the only thing that's certainly guaranteed would be that revenue for the testing companies. That's just simply the questions that I would ask or offer you to consider for that policy.
Yeah, thank you, Tim.
Section 3 and 4 and 5 also have to do with the repeal of the exit exams, very surgical repeal. Section 6 goes into charter schools and the methodology of the way charter schools apply for becoming a charter school at the local level. If that application is denied, this would establish an appeal process to go to the commissioner. The commissioner would then make his or her recommendations and forward those to the State Board of Education for final say on that matter. However, there is a provision in the charter school that if they're denied at the local level and by the commissioner, then it's a dead issue and they can go no further. So again, as a policy question, I would ask maybe to the committee to consider that the commissioner would provide recommendations to the State Board of yay or nay, but that it would be ultimately the State Board that would still give the final say in the matter, not that it stop at the commissioner's level. That, Mr. Chairman, I think concludes the policy considerations that we're going to take up today in this bill.
Okay, thank you very much, Tim. Well, let's proceed through those one at a time, beginning with challenging, of course. Now, we have passed that Representative Seaton's bill out of this committee, so we've had a chance to talk about it quite a bit. Is there anything further that needs to be brought up or anyone wants to bring up? Yes.
Yeah, I've been thinking about this, Mr. Chair, and one of my concerns is that the way the language is here, and I believe in Representative Seaton's bill also, as there's no sideboards on what kind of classes and can be challenged, and I know that my district already has a program in place where students can challenge, but they don't allow it to be, for example, on lab classes. You can't challenge a lab, and I'm just thinking that maybe we should do something similar, because there are some materials that sort of are really hands-on experiential, and I'm not certain that it's a good idea to let people challenge those.
That's right, and we also talked about performing arts, dance, and theater, and all of those things. How do you challenge that? Commissioner, could we have some response from the department? Is this a problematic or an issue that you've given thought to?
And, Mr. Chair, I might add that the governor's proposal is a little bit more constrained than this Representative Seaton's bill.
Thank you, Chair Stevens. For the record, Mike Hanley, Commissioner for the Department of Education and Early Development, and Senator Gardner's recognition of the burden that could put on a district to put together an assessment for those experiential type classes was one of our concerns as well, and one of the governor's as well, and that is why in the language in the governor's bill, it does speak to the requirement of districts to provide that opportunity to earn credit for courses offered, and it does provide those specific courses: mathematics, language arts, science, social studies, and world languages. So it does put those sideboards on, recognizing the difficulty of really truly assessing a class that is experiential in nature.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Gardner.
And just for the record, I'm not worried about the difficulty for the district. I'm more worried about what it means to the student to actually get credit for a course and how that translates. Yeah.
Very good. Very important question. Two bills progressing with some differences. Thank you, Commissioner. Further comments on the challenge issue? Actually, Commissioner, you might as well sit right there if you don't mind, because the next one should be interesting as well. And it's requiring the SAT, ACT, or work keys to graduate or receive a diploma. And the question, I guess, basically is, why would we do that? What's the benefit to the department, to education? What's the cost to it? Reflections on that?
Thank you, Chair Stevens. Looking at that component of the HSGQE removal section of the bill.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. No, we're talking about the Section 2, which is College and Career Readiness right. Assessments. Oh, yeah.
Thank you. I've always just kind of associated those, they are separate in the bill. We'll remove the one. And just to clarify that if nothing were to take place, if this section were not to pass, all of our students would continue to be required to take the Work Keys assessment, which has been valuable. It gives information to students as to their aptitude towards particular careers. So that will be in place. It's required in 11th grade now, and nothing would change. The goal of this, though, is to say, you know, we've got students who have a direct vision and a plan to go to college. Should we be requiring them to take the Work Keys, or can we give them the opportunity to move towards, you know, take the Work Keys, or use a tool that they'll need to get into college? So that's what this section simply does, is provides that opportunity to take the course or take the assessment that's most relevant to a student. So that would be providing the ACT, SAT. So that's what I see.
Could a student take both Work Keys and thinking about going to college as well, so want to take the SAT?
Yes. There are no prohibitions on how many times or what assessments a student can take. What we have right now, though, is the state pays for Work Keys. Students who want to take the other, they pay for it on their own. One fundamental issue that we've had with that is that's one of the ways to qualify for the performance scholarship. So to qualify for the performance scholarship, you have to pay for an assessment if you want to take that route towards college. So we believe that the state would pay for one administration of the student's choice in the last 2 years of a student's career, in their junior or senior year. We would pay for either Work Keys, ACT, or SAT. They could surely take another one at their own cost if they would like.
Thank you. Senator Gardner.
Thank you. Commissioner, I've heard anecdotally that the Work Keys is dated and not current. Do you have any information about that, and do we know anything about how they update the skill levels and things like that?
To the chair, Senator Gardner, our employers in Alaska have not stated that, not that I have heard. As a matter of fact, we're having more and more employers use the Work Keys assessment as an entry level understanding of where a student's skills are. So I have heard a couple things from some teachers. I've heard some things from students that it's just not, we don't try, I don't need that, it's not relevant. Now there are several that take it seriously and several that don't, because they're not, that's not where they're going. The Work Keys isn't valid to them, but I have not heard from employers that it's outdated, and in fact we're having more employers use it.
Thank you.
Thank you for the comments. Thank you so much, Commissioner. So I think we've covered those issues. Anything else under the assessments? I think let's move on to the exit exam. Yes.
Thank you. Commissioner, let's assume that 75% of the students end up taking SAT or ACT. How do you differentiate between which one you take? I mean, if I was a parent and you were looking me in the eye and say your child should take ACT or SAT, how do you differentiate between those two, other than you like A better than S is the beginning of the acronym?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, some schools require certain ones or use that primarily the ACT or the SAT. Just for clarification, you're talking about the difference between SAT and ACT,
right?
Correct? The other thing that is probably worth clarifying, and maybe this committee would like to address it, what it doesn't require is that a district give both of those. It does require that a district provide a college-bound assessment. So in the way I read this is that they would be required to give the Work Keys, and they would be required to give an assessment for college, towards college. And that's considered because, especially when we look at the sensitivity of the amount of testing and what it takes for a teacher to get pulled aside or whatever to give those assessments, that especially with small districts, it may be particularly cumbersome to provide both of those. But as far as which one a parent would choose and a student would choose, I don't think I'd have much insight into that except for what they've heard and what their preference would be.
Senator?
Well, you know, I'm thinking, you mentioned the performance scholarship. Did you have to take one or the other? I forget, you know, what the differentiation is. And I'm one of those that says, you know, we have these parallel-run scholarship programs, that's okay, I suppose. On the other hand, if you're in the scholars program, what do you have to do to qualify for going to a college campus?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, are you referring to the UA scholars program, the University of Alaska?
Yeah, top
10%. It's simply the top 10% by GPA for the UA scholars program.
Right.
So there isn't a time to, they don't require the SAT or ACT. They typically use the AccuPlacer, but they don't require that prior to them applying either. So they're different programs, and what we have seen is the top 10% oftentimes haven't accessed the rigor that they need, and even top 10% of students, especially in small schools, can need significant remediation. So they're just different programs.
Yeah. So, Mr. Chairman, if I might, I mean, what do you see the utility for the state, this committee or future committees, and in the assessment tools we're talking about as far as looking at how we do business? Case in point, I mean, we know about remedial training going on the college campus, and we don't like to talk about it, but it's a significant number. It appears to me that somehow we ought to figure out where the students are coming from, what's the root cause of they needing remedial training, and where they need remedial training. My assumption, first thing is can't write, and that might be false, but that'd be my guess. But whatever it turns out to be, that we ought to take a look at that. And I remind us when Senator Stevens, as I recall, headed up the task force, we went around the state looking at the root cause of remedial training and how to address it and what have you. And I sort of admired Pat Gamble as the president of the university, said, hey, you guys are looking at me like it's my problem. The system is sending me a problem, so that the answer is fix them before they get to our campus so that we don't need remedial training. So I guess my bottom line question for you is there a way to get at remedial training through that, because this will be our instrument, it appears.
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, I recognize the validity of that. I don't know that this will be the tool to get at that. I don't know that we're anticipating that this be designed for that. More appropriately, what we're seeing is we're working directly with the university, and our ACPE, the Commission on Post-Secondary Education, has a grant to put together a longitudinal data system to really connect the data that we have in K-12 to the university, to the workforce. So with that data, then we can begin to understand, you know, where are we needing remediation? Are there particular areas of the state, particular schools, particular classes that we can begin to track that backwards and address those issues? The vision of this has not been to provide that kind of data for the state, but instead provide that data for students, counselors, and parents to say, are you ready? Look beyond high school, look beyond graduation. Here's your current status, and here are some things you might need to do next. So this is moving from an accountability measure that we have in the HSGQE to an informational thing that will guide students. And it's kind of prying our hands away from a little bit of accountability in that sense, because we do believe we have other things in place now that can measure that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator. Further comments? Thank you, Commissioner. Let's move on to the exit exam. And as you know, we've already dealt with that here, passed the bill out, but it's also part of this omnibus bill of the governor's education package. I'm not sure that needs any further explanation. Any comments you have on it, one way or the other? Hopefully one of these bills will make it to the finish line.
The only thing I would add, Senator Stevens, is simply the importance that I believe of the transitional language that all three bills currently have in them. And it's simply for those students who have graduated, who now we call adults since they're not officially students any longer, that ability for the next 3 years to come back and still utilize the tools they need to get that diploma if they'd like to come back and earn that. So just the importance of that remaining in there, both for moral and legal reasons, to not take away the tool that allows a student to get the diploma for at least, you know, 3 more years after hopefully the HSGQE is removed.
Some of the concern I've received from other legislators has to do with the cost of continuing it. So there's a deadline which it stops. This would be the last year the students have to take it. But those that fail it, then we continue to allow them to take it for the next three years. Maybe to explain that, but the concern I've heard is that's an enormous cost, and I think there's some negotiations going on. Could you help us understand that?
Yes, Senator Stevens. There are some costs, and it's not tied directly to those students taking it. This last year, we had about 300 students come back between the two administrations of the HSGQE, about 300, I said, students, adults, that came back to try to earn their diploma. About 50% of those actually did earn a diploma. But the cost of that is really a function of the current contract that we would be getting out of with DRC, which is our assessment company that provides the HSGQE for us. So we are working with them. We think that it could be as high, and the fiscal component speaks to $1.3 million out of $2.7 million, but we are surely negotiating that and working to reduce that. So it's really more a function of that contract that we have that will now be removing. Could we save a little bit? And we'll still have the contract until 2015. I think the responsibility to provide that assessment for 2 years is important, and we'll continue to negotiate that to the best degree we can.
Well, good. We don't have to finalize that here. That'll be looked at by the Finance Committee. But you expect that to have a clearer understanding of the actual cost as in the near future?
Senator Stevens, I'm hoping this week we are actively engaged with them now.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, Senator.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, there are two locations that I'm familiar with, probably more, but that students gather that, quite frankly, would be a significant number looking to be able to get their high school diploma. One is Camp Challenge at Fort Rich, and the other is a jobs program. What does your organization do to facilitate those young people to be able to get their high school diploma? I mean, do you have a strategy that addresses those two groups of people?
Through the chair, Camp Challenge, are you speaking to the Military Youth Academy? And the other one was?
Jobs program and the federal program in Palmer.
Right. We do work with the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, but they receive their students. The criteria for becoming a student there or a cadet there is that you have dropped out. And they do a couple different things. They can offer a type of a diploma through the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. But oftentimes they are they're reengaging those students who have been disengaged and reincorporating them back into the K-12 system or into the high school system to allow them to get that diploma. So we work with them in those regards, both in transitioning them to the Youth Academy as well as back into the K-12 system to get their diploma from the high school. With the jobs, it's very similar. They are really traditionally working towards a GED at that point, but we do work to re-engage them as much as possible back into the K-12 system.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Senator. So this is another aspect of the governor's bill, the exit exam. We have discussed it. We passed it on SB 111. And let's move on to the final section 6 and 7. Well, not the final one, but there's also the finance of the BSA issue. But section 6 and 7, which is charter school applications and the appeal process. We've discussed that somewhat. If a charter school is, if a district receives a request to start a charter school, they can deny that, and this allows a appeal process beyond the district to the commissioner, and in some cases to the board. I guess my concern, frankly, is if everyone says we need to move ahead with this charter school in spite of the fact that the district doesn't want it, how on earth are we going to enforce them to have a charter school if they don't want it? We have some district folks here, some school board folks here, and I just don't quite understand that process. Could you comment on that, Commissioner?
Thank you, Chair Stevens. What I think is the most critical and important part of this is not the appeal process, but the integrity that will be implemented at the local process. The one component in Part B of this section states that a local school board approving or denying the application for a charter school must be in writing and must include all relevant facts of finding and conclusions of law. That simply says that you need to have a valid reason for denying a charter or approving a charter, and it needs to be public. There needs to be some accountability at that local level. I honestly believe that if there is that component in place, that we won't see many appeals. And if those appeals come forward and they are based on the findings of fact and the conclusions of law, I think it would be difficult to overturn those. But what has been out there currently and what stories that we hear are charter schools are either counseled away from applying because they probably wouldn't be approved anyway. And with this process in place, a charter a parent group could still come and say, we'd like to hear the answer. We'd like to put this in public and have the answer and recognize that there is an appeal process there. That's what I see as being the biggest component. Now, currently, all denials and approvals go to the state board. Through this process, a denial has a next step. And if the charter school proposal, the proposers would like, the next step would be to go to the commissioner. The commissioner can approve, but it still goes to the state board for the final approval. It's that extra set of eyes, the extra review prior to going to the state board. Now, typically, a denial that would go to the state board, and I have not been able to find any history of any denials that have gone to the state board. So I'm just not aware of denials in the state right now for charter school applications. But a denial would go to the state board. They're not being asked to necessarily review it and try to overturn it, but it's simply informational that it's a denial. Typically, I would anticipate that the board would recognize that. An approval obviously requires the additional approval at the state board level. I saw a question before I get to...
Yes, and we'll get to Senator Garney in just 1 minute, but yeah. Make sure I understand that if the commissioner were to deny it, that's the end of the process. If the commissioner were to approve it, then it goes on to the state board. Do I have that correct?
They both go to the state board, but if it's denied at the local level and denied, confirmed by the commissioner, it will go to the state board. And I would anticipate that it would be more informational than anything. I don't anticipate that the state board would be compelled to review that for approval.
Thank you. Senator Garner.
Thank you. You know, in looking at proposed legislation, I try to make a habit of saying, you know, what problem is this fixing? The clause here or the section here, you say they have no history of denials, and what we're trying to do is to force accountability where a board denies a charter school. Why put in anything other than requiring accountability, just that they make a statement about why they're making a denial?
Through the chair, Senator Gardner, I believe that by having a process in place that an applicant recognizes that they have an avenue for review brings that integrity to the local level, that charter schools wouldn't be counseled away from even applying. They wouldn't be persuaded to not even put in the effort. They know that they have that review, and I think that brings integrity to the local process.
Yes, Senator.
Thank you. If a group of very well-meaning, idealistic, and impractical people bring a proposed charter in the early stages to a district, and the district, you know, says there are some serious concerns here and it's unlikely to go forward because this is informally just meeting with people about it, is that inappropriate to counsel them against moving forward if the district sees severe problems with their proposals?
Through the chair, absolutely not. Absolutely not. They would counsel and say, we see these issues based on findings of fact and conclusions of law. We see these issues as being not an effective model. And they could surely counsel them that way. And for a parent group that felt like, no, you're wrong, these are all great ideas, they could still take that forward. And it could be that the conclusion is based on, you know, the counsel, the original counsel. But so the idea is not to counsel away people, you know, to avoid counseling people who have not thought out their ideas.
Thank you.
Thank you. So in your experience, or I guess from what you've heard, Commissioner, none have been, no charter schools have been denied that we know of by districts. It could be possible that some were encouraged not to, but we don't really know of that
right.
at this point. Thank you, Commissioner. For the comments, Senator.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we're being a little naive. I mean, clearly, if you check about, you talk to some parents who, I mean, think about it for a moment. The charter school is the ultimate in parental involvement in the system. They will start a school. We got an idea. And for people to take that initiative, you just can't stiff arm them and say, well, we don't think your idea is, we're not going to hear this because we don't think your idea is quite ready yet for prime time. If you don't think that's not practice, then you need to pay attention. Some school districts, the word will be, we can't afford another charter school. So, you know, to say that the charter schools have not been denied, they haven't formally had not passed stamped on the front of it, but there's an informal system that has a cap in some areas, and it goes a lot further than that for those that have been approved in some cases. But you will also hear people say, well, don't bring your charter school application or process forward now because this particular superintendent and or board is not necessarily favorable towards charter schools. Now, that doesn't mean that we should be advocating for every charter school, but we have to keep in mind it's the ultimate when families come forward and say, we want to be involved and we want to start a school. And then the APC, which is made up of parents and community members, are what run the school. And the other one, you can go to some school districts, let's just take the evaluation of, and the law reads where the APC evaluates, generally speaking, how the school is doing in some of the work performances, and others, the school district thinks it's their role. But it's the APC, as I recall reading the law. So there's a lot of amalgamations and, transitions and metamorphoses that charter schools are going. So, I mean, in my estimation, it's about right for us to look at some that we can modernize charter schools. Because there were big battles. And today, I mean, sitting out here in the audience, some of the people were there. I mean, now charter schools are, quote, the model for choice. They're the choice. At one time, it was the same argument about, oh, my goodness, if you do this, all the best students, all the best teachers, all the best parents, they're going to go to charter schools. And now they're the model for school choice. So we've come away. It's both psychologically and effectively.
Mr. Chair, APC?
Huh?
APC, what does that
mean? Yeah, it's the Academic Policy Committee.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Dunleavy.
Thank you. Through the chair, I agree with Senator Huggins. Actually, I don't think the law goes far enough. As a public school educator, former superintendent, school board president, anything and everything we can do to engage parents is crucial at this stage of the game. I think the governor is right on. Like I said, though, I don't think it goes far enough. In other states, we have independent boards that actually hear the process. Other states have alternative authorized charter schools. And there's Alaska's charter school law, I think, was ranked by most charter school analysts as maybe third from the bottom, fourth from the bottom. And again, I agree with the Senator, because every time there's an attempt at any type of reform or any type of doing something different in these systems, it's met with resistance. The first reaction is, no, we can't do that. And then the question is, what was it we're doing again? I, for one, don't fear parents or groups of people that want to coalesce around a mission to help not just their children but other children. I don't fear that. As a matter of fact, I think in education there's not enough innovation. There's not enough risk-taking. And unless we do that, we're going to, over time, lose more and more parents because they're going to have more and more options other places. So if we want to continue to be a system that does not embrace change, and I mean real change, for the most part, most of our charter schools are really mission schools, okay? Because if you really look at the law, there's certain things they can and can't do compared to charters in other states that are pure charters. Just purely chartered by the state, you get a five-year charter, we're going to follow your progress, going to make sure you have the outcomes that you're promising your charter, and if you do, we'll recharter you. But in Alaska, it's kind of a hybrid. But nonetheless, I think we should do everything we can to encourage folks coalescing around a mission. And this is a step in the right direction.
Thank you, Sir Dunleavy. I hope we understand this. I guess you know, some of the issues we've been dealing with here are in other bills, challenging the exit exam. This is not. Is that correct? Is there any bill moving its way through the legislature that deals with this particular issue on charter schools?
Chair Stevens, Representative Gaddis has a bill that deals with charter schools. It is it's significantly different. It requires a different authorizer. Right now, the local school board is the authorizer. This allows for an appeal, basically, to the state. And I don't want to speak too deeply to the other bill, but there are some differences in regards to this. Keeps things allows for an appeal that provides a different authorizer.
I bring that up because there's not been a lot of discussion about this issue, but I've not heard any objection to it. I mean, we will have an opportunity to hear from districts, see what they think, but for the most part, as the commissioner says, this will take us to a better point where there's a clear reason why a charter is denied or accepted, and we will know that, and we haven't known that in the past, and maybe people have given up along the way because they thought that the district would disapprove it, but now we're going to have a very clear reason for denying or accepting.
Correct.
Yes, Senator.
Through the chair, you said something that reminded me of something. Whenever we go through these exercises, hearing bills, especially in education, and we should ask for input from the practitioners, the teachers, the principals, the superintendents, and the school boards. But too often, who we don't hear from are the actual customers we're designing these programs for, the parents and the children. They're oftentimes too busy with their work, too busy with their daily lives. And so, again, not to use this phrase over and over, but too often we rely upon the input of practitioners. That's not a bad thing. It's a good thing. But if it's not balanced by input from the customers, you get an unbalanced view. And this has led to a history of reform to a great extent being questioned and or thwarted. You have in California now, and I don't know if it's in other states, but you have in California now a parent trigger law brought forth by parents who were just tired of the system not responding to their desires to change schools and change systems. And it was met with huge controversy. All across the United States, we've got reform movements that are in court. There's court action right now. They're battling with special interest groups, all because parents and families want to have more of a say in how their children and where their children are educated. I don't think it's a bad thing. I think it's probably the best thing we can do. And again, I'll end up with this. I absolutely think we need to hear from the practitioners, the policymakers. But it's got to be balanced by as much input as we can possibly get from parents and children, and especially those who feel they are currently divorced from the system. I think it's crucial, or we're going to really miss the mark, and we're going to be back here having these same conversations year after year after year. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator.
Yes, yeah, please. Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, you know, quite often there are a number of things that happened, in this case we're talking about charter school, that is invisible to people like us that are sitting here on the committee. But at one time, charter schools had startup grants, right? So in other words, this was going to be the school, this room. And lo and behold, you have the room and you're paying the lease on it, which is money out of what students normally get if they went to a school that we built, you and I built, out of 70-30 kind of fund. So that's a different overhead factor. Then, though, the room, when you come into it, the school is empty. It doesn't have any furniture. And normally under construction grants, you have a furniture provision, as I recall. In charter schools and starting up, it's an empty school. And then you got to figure out where you're going to get the money. But that was the intent of startup grants. There was a federal piece of that, and there was a state piece of it. Do either one of those still exist?
Through the chair, no, there are no startup grants at this time.
That's the sort of thing that we look at. The erosion of the ability for parents and community members to be able to do something, because things that were in place that facilitated just over time are eroded. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator, for the comments. So I mentioned at the start that there were four items I wanted to discuss today, the challenge issue, the assessment, the exit, and the charter school. There's, of course, the issue of the BSA, which we'll deal with in a future meeting. One other issue that I had left off, and that's the boarding school stipend. And maybe we should take just a minute to cover that. Commissioner, could you give us a reflect on that matter?
Thank you, Chair Stevens. There are two components to that. One is simply that the department will open up an application period annually. That's the only time that a district could apply to have a residential school is during an application period. As far as I know, I think I'm the only commissioner that has opened one. I opened one last year. So that it's simply that component, open it annually, does not require approval of new schools, but just simply opening it. And the second component is to raise the stipend. It is the only component where we support the housing and the boarding and room and board of for students. And the increase in stipend simply is trying to reduce the gap between actual costs as we understand them and the stipend. We have looked at some of our schools that currently operate year-round schools, Nanana and Galena most specifically, looked at their actual costs, and we believe that the increase in the boarding stipend closely matches actual costs. Right now where we are is there's a gap between what we're supporting our schools with and what it's costing them to house their students.
Thank you. Senator Stephan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe on that subject we can get some of the backup data that you used in justifying the cost increase, and in particular what sticks out to me is where we have the South Central region at 800 and Southeast at 820, and then you're bumping them up South Central 1200 and Southeast 1230, and our cost of living I think was a lot closer to parity a couple of decades ago with South Central than it is today. So I'm curious on the analytics behind this, if it was just, you know, very superficial, or you actually went in and took a look at the cost incurred, because I'd be shocked if our costs in Southeast are remotely close to South Central.
Through the chair, we did not break down the geographic differential. We did not modify that. We simply took a few of the schools that we have in place and looked at actual costs. So I can see what we can do in that area, but we didn't propose a change in the geographic differentials.
Thank you. Senator Gardner?
Thank you. I'm having trouble remembering if it was legislation that didn't get all the way through the process or if it's hanging out there someplace, but didn't we just raise the stipend for room and board?
Through the chair, Senator Gardner, last year, Senator Coghill, SB 47, I believe, put forward the actual numbers that are here now. At the time, it would have tripled. There was an addition that sunset last year. It was a two-year addition increase in the stipend. So at sunset last year, Senator Coghill put that forward, and he actually put forward these exact numbers that are before you again today. But instead of, at that time, tripling the stipend, the legislature settled on doubling the stipend.
Oh, okay.
And so it didn't quite increase. Now, he had worked with Senator Coghill last year to determine what numbers would be appropriate when we looked at the actual cost, as I mentioned earlier. So these numbers are again, Senator Coghill has a bill again, but these are the numbers that were before you last year.
Thank you. And I have one other question that's maybe rhetorical, but as we contemplate increasing the number of boarding schools around the state and picking up the room and board for additional students and increasing the allocation for that, I find it interesting. I mean, you use the phrase addressing the gap between what we've been funding and what the actual need is, that we're not doing that for the BSA.
That is a rhetorical question.
Okay.
Thank you, Senator Seven.
I think, Mr. Chairman, back to my question, just so I'm clear on the question, then hopefully with the response back from the department. When you look at the regional comparisons, and I'm just going to talk about the South Central and Southeast because I'm more familiar with that disparity than the rest of them. But I'd like you to take a look at that issue to justify the numeric changes. And also, if you're in Southeast, if you're comparing what portion of the region, because then you compare Juneau to Anchorage, you get one set of numbers. And if you go South and West, you know, the disparity changes precipitously. So I can get a better feel for what we're dealing with.
Thank you. Through the chair, Senator Stedman, probably the best we can do is to look at Mount Edgecombe. It is the residential school we have in Southeast, and see if we can find a comparison between that. And although it's funded slightly differently, it's still a residential school, and we'll do our best to compare.
Okay. Thank you, Senator. Further comments? Okay, well, so we're going to at a later date. Tim, do we have a time where we're going to think of the cost issues, the fiscal issues, next week?
Yeah.
And we certainly want to discuss BSA at that time, but also discuss the boarding school stipend further.
Anything in addition from the committee before we open it up to others? Thank you, Commissioner, very much.
I'd like to point out that we have a sign-up sheet out here, Tim. Is that true? If anyone wants to sign up and testify to any of the issues we've been dealing with, this is a very comprehensive bill with a lot of moving parts, and we're far from being done with it, but I think we're learning a lot as we move along. Let's go to Mike. We have Johanna Bales from the Department of Revenue online if there are any questions of her. Let's go on to Mike Coons from Palmer. Mr. Coons, can you hear me?
Yes, sir, I do.
Please go ahead. Identify yourself if you would.
Yeah, this is Mike Coons from Palmer. I'm speaking for myself. Going back to Section 2 and the comments that were made by administration, the big issue I have with this is the governor finally got rid of us being under Common Core, which is all about data, data, data. And I understand that in order to be able to have a good education program, we need to be able to review where we're at, where we've been, where we're going, and that is also data. But to turn around and say that these kids must pass, take a SAT, ACT, or work keys in order to get their diploma just so they can get data, I think is just beyond the pale. Your staff person that talked about it at first, yeah, if I was 18 years old and I didn't want to take any of those tests, I'd just go in, I'd sign my name, answer the first question and leave. You're not going to get data that way. The only data you really need, the biggest data you need to know is how many kids started high school and how many graduated with a diploma and how many didn't. And I think that's the biggest data that you got. And then also the cost of work keys, according to, I believe it was administration and the House on House Education, stated that SAT was like $52, ACT was a little bit less than that, and work keys was down in the 40. There's no reason in the world I can see. We're looking at trying to save money on education. $40 for a parent to get to shell out for their kid to take a work keys exam, if they want to, is okay. I can't see where that's going to be a huge impediment. The thing is, they don't need to have to take these three tests, because all we're doing then is we're getting rid of the exit exam and then turning right around and putting into this back into the equation a mandatory test, when all they have to do is take their English, their math, their histories, their social studies, their all those required exams, get a C or above, pass it, and get their diploma, and go on into the workforce, or go to college, or go into the military, or do whatever they want to do. They do not need to have a stupid exit exam in any way, shape, or form. Please, sirs, get rid of this whole stupidity, and let's get this back to where it really used to be: hard work, C above, pass, diploma, move on, and become adults and participate in this nation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Coons. Anybody else that has signed up?
Tim, could we? Yes, Senator Gardner.
Thank you. Mr. Coons, I just want to make sure that you realize that the proposal is that these exams would not be high stakes. In other words, students, it's not whether they pass or fail. It's just the information is available to them. They would get their diploma even if they didn't score certain levels.
Senator Gardner, to the chair, the thing is, it's just one more hoop that a kid has to jump through. Okay. I'm retired United States Air Force. I got out of high school with my diploma, and I joined the Air Force, and I went into the Air Force 2 weeks after the fact. I don't need to be slow. If these kids, there's kids out there that want to join the military straight out of high school. They don't need to have to wait for some stupid exit exam just so they can go ahead and in order to get their diploma, so they can go into the military or go into whatever they want to go into.
Thank you.
This is just another hoop.
Thank you, Mr. Coons. I'm sorry. Okay. All right. Thank you. So we have several people standing by that will available if there are questions, but three that would like to address us, and we'll begin with Mark Somerville from Kinney Lake. Mark, thanks for being here. And if you'd identify yourself for the record, please.
Mm-hmm. I'm Mark Somerville, board member for Copper River School District, and I have with me today one of our students, Samuela Finau, who's a sophomore going on high school.
Thank you.
Basically, I'd like to speak in support of SB 139. It would help us, obviously, with the school district to have an increase in the BSA, and we appreciate that. The only concern, we don't have any concerns with the stipulations or the sections associated with the bill. Nothing in there is a concern to us, including the charter schools, or we support the entire bill. Our only concern would be is if the increase in the BSA is in lieu of some of the additional funding that's come to the schools over the past few years for fuel and for transportation. So basically, if it creates a deficit or a decrease in our overall funding at this time, that would be a bad thing for our school. Like most school districts, we're facing with declining enrollment. Our enrollment's dropped 32% in the last 10 years. We had a significant drop in enrollment this last year, which put us into hold harmless, but we're still looking at a $200,000 deficit for next year, which, again, for our school district is English, math, history teachers, or elementary school combining classes. Those are only choices at this point. So any additional funding is always appreciated. We're not a blanket supporter of blanket increases in the BSA, though. We think we agree with the ideas of looking at innovative ways of making a better school and increasing the educational opportunities for our students. We're putting forth an application through the Department of Education for a grant, a planning grant, for a virtual school and residency program. We hope to start that this next semester, and we have an opportunity with the Alaska Bible College leaving our area, so we have options for their entire campus to utilize that. So that planning grant will hopefully put us on track for giving not only our students but all Alaska students more opportunity for higher quality education. So,
well, thank you, Mark. Congratulations for your service to the board. We're pleased to hear that you're serving there. So let's understand this, the BSA. If you've had a chance to look at the funding to your district, are you saying if those additional funds like fuel and transportation were not to come and you would just get the $201 for a three-year period, would that leave you whole, or would it be a reduction, an increase? Do you have any reflection on that?
I don't know the exact numbers, but I would say that more than likely at this point, if we lost the additional funding for the fuel and for transportation, the BSA increase would not make up that difference. The current numbers would not.
Well, I'm glad to hear that from you. That if the BSA remains as it is, and you were not to get those additional funds, it could be a difficult time for the district. Thank you, sir. Questions of Mark? Thank you very much, Mark. Samuel, did you have some comments? We always like to see real students here, so.
I kind of put him on the spot here.
It's okay. You don't have to, but if you care to, we'd be glad to hear from you.
Okay. Hello. I was recently introduced with this, what's it called? The planning grant.
Mm-hmm.
So when I first heard about it, I wasn't fully sure, but later throughout the year, started hearing more people talk about it and thought that it would actually be beneficial for our school. Not only because we're shrinking in numbers, but just to provide more opportunities for students out in the bush. So,
thank you. And Samuel, just for the record, what is your last name?
Samuel Finau.
Could you spell that for us?
yeah.
The last name.
All right, Finau.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Any comments about that you may have about the exit exam, doing away with that, or about the requirements for in this bill for students to take SAT, ACT, or work keys? Any thoughts on the testing, the assessments?
We kind of talked about this in our YAA conference, so yeah, I think it's good to have it because students should have a standard test in order to qualify for graduation to prepare themselves for what they want to do later on.
You're probably not unhappy about not having to, about getting rid of the exit exam, though, I would assume.
Yeah. I know, though, that students did feel that they should maybe make it a little more challenging, but then there are also students who thought that it made sense to have it at the level that it's at because of of students with certain disabilities. So, but yeah, I pretty much just think that we need a standard test in order to qualify for graduation. Yeah.
Thank you, Samuel. Mark, any concluding comments?
No, not really. Just again, just to lend our support to the bill, and again, losing the exit exam, at least from the board's perspective and so on, we don't have concerns with losing the exit exam or replacing it with the SAT or ACT or work keys. All of these options work for us overall. The exit exam right now, I know for my own children and for vast majority of our students at the school, most of them pass the exit exam in their sophomore year, so when they first take it. And we do have some students, of course, that do have that may have some difficulties, but nearly all our students pass. I don't think we have any real failures within our school. So,
thank you, Mark. Thank you, Samuel.
Thank you.
Let's go on to, I believe it's Kevin Shipley, if I have that right. Kevin. And if you'd state your name for the record, please.
Kevin Shipley.
Thank you very much. And you're with?
I'm the superintendent of Cake City Schools.
Thank you, sir. Please continue.
Well, I didn't come today with a prepared statement, and which I usually do when I speak, but you had some questions, and I can't speak to whether I'm in favor or against this bill, but I can speak to some of the issues addressed. As far as testing students out of class, the one question I want us to make sure we ask on anything in education is, how does it affect our current accountability system? What are the consequences, intended and unintended? Because if we're letting students test out of English 1, and we are going to hold them accountable for the HSGQE, then that test needs to be rigorous enough to make sure that they have, that they're going to be successful. Otherwise, you're holding the school district accountable for something that they haven't had any influence over. So as you look at the accountability system, I think that's one of the things. I'm not opposed to it. In fact, we will put policies in place to be able to do that through our board policies and procedures currently. So we're doing that, rigor of the test, and then, just as I say, consistency across the state. It will cost money for local districts to create an accountability test. You know, the state could choose to let us know what the department is approving for those tests, but those are questions we have to ask just for consistency of the accountability. As far as just taking ACT, SAT, and work keys, the state wants to pay for our students to do it. I'm not opposed to that, requiring them to do it on their own. We do currently with work keys, and when our students 100% take the work keys test, and as our students have said, some try hard, some don't. That's up to the student. And anytime you don't tie accountability to a test, you're going to get those results. I'm not for tying accountability to any of these three tests, however, because these do not align to the curriculum that we teach or our state standards. So you're giving a national norm test for something that we're not teaching. So, you know, our students should be able to do various things on these, and we need to work to get that. But that's it. Now, replacing the exam, I would hear that's a different question. If we're the HSGQE, we need to make a decision for our accountability standards. Are we going to have an exit exam? You currently have an exit exam that is aligned to your state standards, and it's at a level, whether it's too high or too low, that's something for the experts to decide. My job is to make sure my kids are ready to take whatever you give me, but it will cost a lot of money to develop a new test. And if we aligned it as a graduation exam, you're giving it in the 11th grade now with our new accountability standard. I don't like that idea that doesn't give kids long enough to take it. I'm not for a graduation exam necessarily. If our students and if our grades are legitimate, the schools we're at, we should be able to know whether a student graduated or not, and we should have those accountability places in place, and we should hold the local districts there. However, if we do have one, let's make sure we have something that our students have an opportunity to be successful with. As far as charter schools, my question there is just local control. I believe we can have public-private partnerships and work together currently. But the question I would have is, if we're going to let the local school board be overruled, then who becomes accountable for that school? Do they answer the local school board? Do they answer the state? And, you know, that's not an issue in Cake I think I'm going to have to deal with. But if the rest of the state, I think we need a system. And remember, how does it affect the system that we currently have in place in whole? Because I think school superintendents would be very happy to work and do creative things, and we try to do creative, all kinds of creative things on our campus. And our goal with our students is, we're going to do what it takes to make you successful. We had 100% pass the HSGQE last year, and the ones who hadn't the year before all passed last year too. We put procedures in place to try to make those students successful because our teachers care. And we do innovative things. I have students currently taking dual credit classes and online classes for things that we couldn't offer at CAPE, that in order to make them successful. So, but everything I do has to meet the accountability standards in the system that you set up for us to do. And I've testified before this commission once before, and I think the egg and the chicken and the pig story is appropriate here. Are we going to cluck and just lay an egg and we go on and don't worry about how it affects it? Or are we going to commit to a system and then long-term keep that system in place for Alaska? And I would say that if we create a system one time, it's going to be a lot cheaper than creating little bits and pieces all the way around. It's a lot harder to do.
Thank you, Mr. Shipley. I appreciate those comments. Senator Stedman.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just kind of curious, in CAPE, you know, it's one of our smaller communities in Southeast. Of the students that are in ninth grade in CAPE, how many graduate from high school?
In our five-year cohort, which is what the way the state does it now, we'll have 100% last year. This year we will have 100%. And we would have been at 100% graduation in that cohort, but a student moved in with not enough credits to graduate as a senior last year. He's graduating this year in our five-year cohort. So we've had, in the last 5 years, two students who will not have graduated from high school, and we have gotten them GEDs or they graduated in their fifth-year cohort. So we don't give up. I have a student that came to us, and he's 19 years old. He came from another state and had 10 credits. There was no way he was going to graduate. Said, I'm giving up. I'm just going to drop out. He has his GED. And the high school qualifying exam was a problem for him. He said, I'm not taking it again. I don't want to do that. That's not the way I want to do it. So we found a different option. He counts as a dropout for me, but he's got his GED, and he's moving on.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate
thank
your comments. We have a few more people to speak, but an issue has come up that I really think needs to be clarified. Commissioner, we had someone earlier that said the governor got rid of Common Core. I think we need to explore that a little bit and make sure I understand it, because and if you please sit down. As I understand it, we don't call it Common Core. It's the Alaska
Academic
Standards or whatever it's called. But still, we do have accountability tests. I mean, whatever happens to this bill, we will continue with accountability tests based on the curriculum and testing to the and aligning with the curriculum. So could you clarify that just so we make sure that everyone knows we're not just talking about ACT, SAT. That's not the end all. We are going to be testing our students and holding them to the curriculum as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Stevens. In June of 2012, Alaska, the State Board of Education adopted a new set of Alaska academic standards. We referenced heavily what was taking place around the country, and that was the Common Core that a lot of states have adopted. Our standards are similar. We, through a lot of stakeholder input, we modified those where we thought it was important to do so. But our standards are now more rigorous. We have raised the bar for our students. We've recognized the amount of students that need remediation when they leave. So we've kind of shifted a focus from just graduation to preparation, making sure that they really have what's needed to move into a career or college. So we've done those things, and our education system over the last several years, since the HSGQE was put in place, has kind of evolved and grown up around the HSGQE. So now we have measures in grades 3 through 10, and as we implement a new assessment next year, it'll be 3 through 11. We have tools. Districts have actually implemented additional formative assessments to instruct, to give them data and information about where their students are. So we now have got a system in place that gives us feedback for our students to where the HSGQE is kind of redundant. It is no longer necessary. So that's where we currently are.
Thank you, Commissioner. I appreciate your clarifying that. Yes, Senator Gardner.
Thank you. And forgive me if I've asked for this before, because I really don't remember. But at one point, the department was considering going with the Smarter Balance assessments. A change has been made. We've contracted with another firm. And at some point, not necessarily today, I'd like to know, you know, why that change was made and a cost comparison between going with Smarter Balance and contracting with somebody else to develop a new assessment for us.
Senator Stevens, I'd be glad to answer that. My guess is that it could lead to a further, it's a hard topic to just touch at the tip of the iceberg. I can do it now or I can do it later.
Let's hold that, and we'll come back to it. It's a very important question because we know we've gone through a couple of gyrations, and we are no longer with Smarter Balance.
Right. Okay. Exactly.
Thanks very much, Commissioner. Let's move on to Brandy Bocatch. Brandy, thank you for being here. Brandy is from Dillingham. And if you just say your name for the record and who you represent.
For the record, I am Brandy Bocatch. I am a junior at Dillingham High School. I'm kind of nervous.
Thank you, Brandy. Don't be nervous. Just us here.
I just wanted to comment on the exit exam. I do not find it necessary. It is based at an eighth grade level. And in our school, like, it's easy to pass. Nobody tries on it. So I don't see why it's necessary. We're taking it as a 10th grader. And I just don't see how that's relevant to us. And I understand that there's going to be something else implemented, like the work keys and ACT and SAT, but those are totally different. They are, like, and I don't see the schools, they're going to choose which ones they want their students to take. And I don't see how we are going to compare them together.
Thank you, Brandy. I think one of the things we've heard about the exit exam is that once kids pass it in their sophomore year, they think they've completed high school and it's all done, when in fact there's a lot more to learn, right?
Yeah, they basically just, like, give up afterwards.
Right, right. Well, thank you very much, Brandy. I appreciate your comments. Peter Hoffner from Cordova. Hi, Peter. How you doing?
Excellent.
Good to see you.
Thank you very much for giving me this opportunity. I just had a couple little comments. One of the things about the BSA...
I'm sorry, just for the record.
Oh, yes, excuse me. Peter Hefner. I'm from Cordova School District. I'm the board president there. One of the interesting things about the BSA over the years, looking at it, you know, we have throughout life, we have COLA increases. Everybody knows inflation. The last number of years, I've been very happy to see that transportation has been given a little boost in terms of inflation. A 1.5 number doesn't necessarily meet inflation, but one of the things that's been so bothersome with the BSA is the fact that it doesn't have any inflationary measures in it. Inflation takes quite a hit out of everything. Over the years, we come down and keep asking for more money, but we're never compensated for inflation. It does affect everybody's lives, and it should be within the formula at some way of protecting schools. Another item is the exit exam. I appreciate the thought of repealing it, even as has been mentioned in the past. It's been reduced to an eighth grade level. Students drop out of school after 10th grade. One of the things, though, I see in there, and I've heard that there's an amendment, they want to continue this until 2017, give children opportunities who have failed it until they're a fifth-year senior. I think that's very important to be able to keep that in there, because getting your certificate versus the diploma, it's a huge thing. I appreciate all you guys' work on it, but one of the things I just would like to see is a little inflation proofing of the BSA. Small matter.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hefner. I appreciate your service on the school board. I don't believe we have anybody else signed up. I appreciate everyone's comments. We will be dealing with this for some time. The issues that we brought, challenging assessment, the exit exam, charter schools, the board school stipend, and we'll come back to that as necessary. But then also next week we'll be talking about the BSA and undoubtedly the stipend for boarding schools as well. So if there's nothing further to come before the committee, we're adjourned.